What I'm going to talk about this afternoon, as you know, is extremely controversial. So it's absolutely critical that you listen closely, because I don't want you walking away from here thinking I said something I did not say. If you don't listen closely, the results can be disastrous.
Das hier ist mein Sektor.
Das hier ist das wichtigste Gerät des Küstenwächters.
Das Gerät und das Gerät.
Überlebensradar.
Mayday, Mayday. Hello, can you hear us? Can you hear us? Can you... over. We are sinking. We are sinking.
Hello? This is the German Coast Guard.
We are sinking. We're sinking.
What are you thinking about?
Are you ready to listen closely? I think the first question that we have to ask when we're talking about a controversial topic, in fact, somebody just asked me the other day, a friend of his was getting married to another man, and everybody was celebrating, and he didn't know what to do. He said, what should I do? I said, well, you should ask the other person a question if they're asking you your opinion on a controversial issue. What's the question? Before speaking on a controversial topic, ask, do you consider yourself a tolerant person? Do you consider yourself a tolerant person? What's the other person going to say? Well, probably, of course, yes, of course I'm a tolerant person. Then you can say, well, great, because if I say something you don't agree with, you're going to tolerate it then, right? See, what you've done is you've just defanged the other person. Because if they're going to claim to be tolerant before you state your opinion, then they're going to have to be tolerant after you state your opinion. And of course, in order to tolerate something, by definition, you have to disagree with it. You don't tolerate things you agree with, you agree with them. So by definition, you have to disagree in order to tolerate something. Now, if they get all annoyed with you after you state your opinion, they're obviously thinking they're right. So here's what you might say to them. You might say, why is it that when I say I'm right, you call me intolerant, but when you say you're right, you're just right? Notice that everybody thinks they're right. That's why they have an opinion. Now, if you really want to get into details on tactics like this, I highly recommend you get the book by Greg Kokel called Tactics. These are some of the things that he points out in his book. But just ask questions like this before you move forward on any controversial topic. Now, next question is, are Christians commanded to be tolerant? Yes, be careful how you answer. No, Christians are not commanded to be tolerant. Tolerance is too weak. Tolerance says hold your nose and put up with them. Love says reach out and help them. And sometimes the way to love people is to tell them not to do something they're going to do because they're going to hurt themselves or others. In fact, if you tolerate everything, you're not loving, you're unloving. We know this as parents, right? As parents, you don't tolerate everything your kids do. If you did, you wouldn't be loving. So the key here is what does it mean to love? What it means to love is we love individuals with truth. That often means opposing behavior that is harmful to them and others. You know, there's a lot of false compassion out there. I grew up in New Jersey. Forget about it. And next to me was my best friend, and his brother got involved in homosexuality right after high school. He went up into New York City, got very immersed in the lifestyle. And initially, of course, his parents were shocked, but eventually they came not only to tolerate it, but to celebrate it. Well, we buried him at the age of 36, dead from AIDS. Now, I'm not here to judge his parents or anything. I'm just saying that I think in retrospect, when you look back on something, to tolerate something that is going to kill potentially the individual is not loving. It is unloving. It's compassion, but it's false compassion. It's easy to engage in false compassion. It's easy to say, look, I'm with you, whatever you want, I'm with you, I support you. It's difficult to engage in true compassion. True compassion says, I love you so much that I will do everything I can to prevent you from doing what you want to do. because I know you're going to hurt yourself and others. Even if you hate me for it, I'm going to engage in true compassion. And unfortunately, false compassion is a lot easier. So I hope to engage in some true compassion here because I hope to be correct, not politically correct. If you came for a PC presentation on homosexuality and same-sex marriage, you are in the wrong place. So let me point out one thing about the Bible, and this is all I'm going to say about the Bible here, because this isn't really about the Bible, but I always hear people saying, well, the Bible's singling out homosexuality. Does it single out homosexuality? No. God approves only sex between a man and a woman within the bond of marriage. All other sexual activity is harmful and prohibited, whether it's fornication, which is premarital sex. Oh, you can't say that in America today. Well, I just did. Polygamy, adultery, bestiality, incest, homosexuality, etc. They're all prohibited. There's only one relationship, sexual activity, that is condoned, and that's between a man and a woman inside of marriage. Now, why is that? Well, there's a number of theological reasons, but let's use a very pragmatic reason. Sex is like fire. If you keep it in your fireplace, it will warm you. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. Anywhere else in your house, and it will burn down your house. Sex is a very powerful act. It's not just physical. For those who say it's just physical, let me ask you a question. Why is it that when somebody rapes you, it's worse than when somebody simply assaults you? Because we all know that sex has other components to it than just physical activity. There's a moral, social, spiritual angle on sex. It's not just a physical act. It is a physical act, but it's not just a physical act. So we're not singling out homosexuality. The Bible's not singling out homosexuality. It says any sexual activity outside of the bonds of marriage between a man and a woman is trouble. And it is. It's trouble. Short term, no. Long term, trouble. Now, why do many heterosexuals support same-sex marriage? Heterosexuals. I think there's a number of reasons. Probably the first reason, but not the most prominent, is intellectual. We don't understand why the state supports marriage. We think the reason the state supports marriage is because two people love one another, and if you love somebody, you ought to be able to marry them. That's not why the state supports marriage. We'll talk about that here in a minute. The second reason is more moral. We've been duped into believing that this is a civil rights issue, that it's somehow immoral to oppose. It's not a civil rights issue. Nobody's being denied rights. Everybody has the same rights. Everybody has the equal right to marry somebody the opposite sex. I don't have the right to marry somebody of the same sex. Everybody has the right to marry somebody the opposite sex. The law treats everybody equally. Now, I understand people who have homosexual desires would prefer to have the law allow them to marry somebody of the same sex, but they're under the same law everybody is under. The law that says you can marry somebody the opposite sex who's of the right age and not related to you closely. But I think the most prevalent reason that heterosexuals support same-sex marriage is emotional. We are loving people who want our sexual friends and relatives to be happy. We are also impacted by insults and peer pressure. We don't want to be called the bigots. We don't want to be called the homophobes. You know, Gary Habermas today, earlier, was talking about the fact that when people don't have a real good intellectual case, what they try and do is shut you up by calling you names, and then they try and use power to legislate your view out of existence. That's what's going on here. Now, the first part of this, we're loving people who want our homosexual friends to be happy. That's a noble reason on the surface to be for same-sex marriage. But as soon as you dig a little deeper, as soon as you go below the surface, you realize there are unintended consequences that you might not have considered. And the rest of what I'm going to say, pretty much, are the unintended consequences. I submit to you the only reason that Western nations are beginning to support same-sex marriage is because we're living on the vapor of Christian compassion. And we see that this appears to be on the surface a compassionate position. The problem is when you look deeper, it turns out not to be compassionate at all, but everybody gets hurt by it, even homosexuals themselves. So let's go a little bit further. Here's what we're going to do today. The first thing we're going to talk about is, what is the same-sex marriage debate about? It's not what most of us think it's about. Secondly, we're going to talk about the four P's and the four Q's. If you can remember these four P's and four Q's, I think you can speak intelligently on the issue to anybody. You just have to remember four P's and four Q's. We'll get to that secondly. Then we're going to talk about, why does the law matter? Why should Christians even be concerned about the law? Why shouldn't Why shouldn't we just preach the gospel and leave the law to other people? Why should we care? We'll get into that. Then we're going to talk about who could same-sex marriage hurt. These are part of the unintended consequences that people don't seem to see, at least not when they initially say, oh, maybe I'm for same-sex marriage. There are unintended consequences that continue to impinge on people, and we'll see some of those unintended consequences when we get to point four. And then if I have time, we'll try and answer some questions or objections like born this way and equal rights. Now, if I can't get to all that, it's all in this little book called Correct, Not Politically Correct, How Same-Sex Marriage Hurts Everyone. It's on the cross-examine table in the hallway. So let's start here by what is the same-sex marriage debate about? Well, let me talk about what it's not about. It is not about equality or equal rights. As I just mentioned, everybody has the same equal right to marry somebody of the opposite sex. That law treats everybody equally. Secondly, it's not about discrimination against the class of people. It's not about denying homosexuals the ability to commit to one another. Homosexuals already can commit themselves to one another till death do them part, and nobody from the government is going to stop them. They can already do that. Anybody can do that. Two heterosexuals can do it. There's just no provision for same-sex marriage. It's not to debate about love or private relationships. This has nothing to do with love or private relationships. It's not about tolerance or intolerance. It's not about bigotry or homophobia. It's not about sexual orientation or being born a certain way. It's not about race or the civil rights struggle, or the other side is always talking about this is just like the civil rights struggle. It's not about interracial marriage. The two are not analogous at all. It's not about heterosexuals and divorce, although I will say that heterosexuals have done a great job of destroying the institution of marriage. The problem is, this is not an argument for same-sex marriage. Why? Because if your car has one flat tire, giving it a second flat tire does not help it. It's not about the separation of church and state, and it's not about religion, and it's not even, for homosexuals, about marriage. What? Why is it not about marriage? Because fewer than 10% of homosexuals get married when they're given the opportunity, and those that do get married break up at rates much higher than heterosexuals. So homosexuals don't want to get married, and when they do get married, they don't stay married. So what is this debate all about then? It's about really one thing. Does anyone know? Acceptance. It's beyond acceptance. It's really about validation and normalization. This is Andrew Sullivan, one of the most articulate defenders of same-sex marriage, a homosexual man himself. And back in 1996, he wrote a book called Virtually Normal, and here's what he said in the book. He said, if nothing else were done at all and gay marriage were legalized, 90% of the political work necessary to achieve gay and lesbian equality will have been achieved. It's ultimately the only reform that matters, and he's absolutely right. Once same-sex marriage is put into place, then homosexual behavior will be viewed as the legal and moral equivalent of heterosexual behavior. And anybody who disagrees will be hurt. This is not about live and let live. You'll see as we get into this. It's not about live and let live at all. It's about using the strong arm of the law to force people to support homosexual behavior. And anybody who disagrees will be hurt. And we'll see why here in a minute when we talk about the fact that the law is a great teacher. So it's not about all those other things. It's really about validation and normalization, as Andrew Sullivan himself has said. Now, secondly, what are the four P's and the four Q's? Well, first of all, the first P is purpose. For what purpose does the government support natural marriage? And by the way, I use the term natural marriage, not traditional marriage. Why? Because natural marriage points out that the reason marriage exists is because of the natural design of the man and the woman. I know people don't often bring this up, but have you ever noticed that the plumbing works for men and women? That we appear to be designed for one another, and that a man and a woman can do something that individually they can't do. Only they can come together and procreate, create another human being, basically. So the reason that the state is involved in marriage is not because two people love one another. In fact, by the way, you know, most marriages around the world are arranged. And I think I've seen some statistics that show that the arranged marriages seem to work out better than the ones we get into, right? Because usually parents know a little bit better. You know, you should be with her and he should be with, you know, they know that. In fact, when you go for a marriage license They don't ask you, do you really love him? Are you sure you really love her? They don't care! Because it's not about love or emotional attraction or any of that. What is the reason the state supports natural marriage, marriage between a man and a woman? Because only natural marriage perpetuates and stabilizes society. It creates children. It raises children by a mom and a dad. It civilizes men, protects women, and perpetuates and stabilizes society. This last part about perpetuating and stabilizing society, is really the key, because the foundation of any civilization is the biological two-parent family home. Once the biological two-parent family home begins to crumble, the entire building comes down. If we started crumbling the bricks in this building right now, the whole building would come down, and that's what we've seen in our culture for about the past 40 years. Once no-fault divorce started in California in 1970, which was started by who? Ronald Reagan. Not many people know that, but he signed the first no-fault divorce law in 1970, and then it spread all the way across the country. Now, he later came to regret that. But we made marriage through no-fault divorce all about the emotional, romantic desires of individuals and nothing about children. And if, you know, you just don't have that feeling of love anymore, then, well, you deserve somebody else. Sometimes I'm ordained, so sometimes I do marriages. I officiate marriages. I actually officiated Clint's marriage right there. He's a video guy right there. He's a great guy. There's Clint. And anyway, I said, Clint and some other people that I've married before, I said, before you get married, you have to read C.S. Lewis's chapter in Mere Christianity on marriage. And this is amazing because at the time, Lewis had never been married. And he points in there that that love is not the kind of love that we think about in society. It's not this romantic thing where you have all these feelings. He points out that when you go stand before someone to marry that individual, you can't promise to feel the same way for the next 50 years. Feelings come and go. The only thing you can do is agree to seek the best of the other individual, to stay with that individual through better or worse, despite what feelings may come and go. He said, you ever marry or you ever meet somebody for the first time? You have a romantic desire. You get a little infatuated with that individual. And all you can think about all day is the other person, right? People think that that's going to last for 50 years. Lewis points out it couldn't last for 5. If it did, you'd be dead, right? You couldn't do anything else. You're always just thinking about the other person. What would become of your life? What would become of your job? What would become of your health? Your heart beating like a hummingbird all the time. You wouldn't be able to do anything if that feeling continued. He says love, real love, is a decision to seek the good of the other individual. But in our culture, unfortunately, we think marriage is all about the explosion that started the relationship, not the steady decision that keeps the relationship going. And so we've created our laws to say, well, look, if you don't really like the other person anymore, if you don't have that feeling anymore, you should find somebody else. You see what the destruction has done to our society. Because when marriages break up, you still have kids. Kids are brought up in broken homes. Kids from broken homes commit more of the crime, which means that the government has to get bigger to create more welfare, more police, more prisons, which means taxes have to go up, which means deficits also go up. This is why, by the way, you can't consistently be a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. Because they're inexorably linked. The reason we're having fiscal problems is because we have moral problems. But nobody wants to say that. No politician will say that. But that really is the truth. So the foundation of society is marriage between a biological man and woman parent. That's it. Or in fact, let me put it this way. There really isn't parenting. There's mothering and fathering. Mothers and fathers are different. And you don't need a study to prove this, do you? No. Was your mom different than your dad? Of course. So kids need moms and dads. The problem is same-sex couples always, always, always deny their child either a mother or a father. So the first P is, for what purpose does the government get involved in marriage? It's because it perpetuates and stabilizes society. In other words, the government gets a great benefit from families coming together and staying together. Now, the other three P's, oh, by the way, the government only has three options with any kind of behavior. And laws address behaviors. They don't address persons. Nobody's being discriminated against by the current marriage laws we have here, because the law is addressing a behavior, and marriage is a behavior. Now, here are the next three P's. The government has three options on any behavior it wants to regulate. It can prohibit a behavior, permit a behavior, or promote a behavior. Right now, the government promotes marriage between a man and a woman because it brings forth all of these great benefits to all of society. Now, it prohibits certain sexual relationships like polygamy, incest, and pedophilia because they are medically dangerous and morally problematic. And for many years, of course, our country prohibited homosexual relationships as well, but thanks to the Supreme Court, they got rid of that. And now we permit homosexual and heterosexual relationships that are not married. Now, my question is this. Let's suppose you never get involved in a marriage, that you never marry somebody of the opposite sex. Are you being discriminated against because the government promotes that relationship and you choose, for whatever reason, not to engage in it? No, you are not in any way being discriminated against. In fact, we do this with vocations. Notice that we promote through the government police work. Why? Because police work brings all these positive benefits to everyone in society. And we permit other vocations, most other vocations, and we prohibit a few, like being a hitman or being a drug dealer, right? We say they're harmful. Well, question, let's suppose you decide to become an accountant, but your neighbor Joe decides to become a police officer. Are you being discriminated against because Joe is being paid by the government and you're not? No, you're not being discriminated against at all. In fact, you get the benefits of Joe being a police officer even if you never become a police officer yourself. This is the same thing that's true with marriage. Even if you never engage in marriage, you get the benefits of marriage because the whole society is better, and therefore a rising tide lifts all boats. You get the benefits of all of these benefits that marriage gives. You experience those benefits. So even if you don't get married yourself, you get the benefit of marriage. Marriage between a man and a woman is a great thing for society. So those are the four P's. What about the four Q's? Here are just four questions you can ask of somebody else who particularly is on the other side of this issue. The first question is this: if same-sex marriage had serious, negative, unintended consequences, would you reconsider your position? If the other person says no, move on to somebody else. They're not open to evidence. They've already made up their minds. Don't confuse me with the facts. They might have an emotional reason that they're clinging to this idea of same-sex marriage. The next question is this: if heterosexual and homosexual relationships are heterosexual and homosexual relationships the same or different? If the other person answers yes or no, they're going to be in trouble. In other words, no matter how they answer, they're going to be in trouble. If they say that heterosexual and homosexual relationships are the same, then you should ask them, then why are you fighting for same-sex marriage at all? Why don't you just marry somebody of the opposite sex? After all, you're saying the relationships are the same. Just marry somebody of the opposite sex and be done with it. Why spend all this energy trying to get same-sex marriage approved? Why not just marry somebody of the opposite sex if they're the same relationships? And they're going to have to say, well, okay, they're not the same relationships. Oh, you're admitting they're different then. Well, good. Well, what you do then is you treat equal things equally, you don't treat different things equally. When you treat different things equally, that's not equality, that's stupidity. You treat equal things equally, you don't treat different things equally. Now, how are the relationships different? We're going to get into that. But by your own admission, you're saying they're different. In fact, you would not be fighting for same-sex marriage unless you implicitly recognized that the relationships were different. Because if they were the same again, you'd marry somebody of the same sex and you wouldn't worry about it. Next question. What would be the effects in society if everyone lived faithfully in natural marriage? That's marriage between a man and a woman. What would happen? Well, I mean, socially, everything would be better. If kids were brought up in biological two-parent family homes, you'd certainly have far less abortion. You'd certainly have far less crime, which means you'd also have far less welfare, far less government expenditures, lower taxes, lower deficits, a better economy, more jobs. You get the idea. It's all connected. Next question. What would be the effects in society if everyone lived faithfully in same-sex marriage? Are you guys with me? It'd be over. Now, I'm not saying that a law that promoted same-sex marriage would necessarily cause this. That's not obviously true. I'm simply saying that quite obviously by looking at these two questions, you can see the relationships are drastically different. That maybe the government ought not promote them the same way, or should maybe promote one and not the other. They're not the same relationship, so don't treat them the same. All right, those are the four cues. You could probably think of other cues, but let's now talk about why does the law matter? Why should we even care about the law? Let's just preach the gospel. Let's leave all this law stuff to other people. When people say that, I normally take out my iPhone and I go to Google and I'll type in something into Google and this picture will pop up. Can anyone tell me what this is? Yeah, you Google Korea satellite night, and this is what you're going to see. This is the Korean Peninsula at night. You can see there's the 38th parallel right there, which we fought over for about 50 years ago to try and maintain at least, and we did. This is South Korea. South Korea is filled with light. It's filled with productivity. It's filled with the gospel. It's one of the most Christianized countries in the world. North Korea, on the other hand, is a concentration camp. There's one major reason for the difference. And don't say electricity. Okay. What's the major reason for the difference between South and North Korea? Someone's saying it's government. The broader category is politics. Politics. The South has freedom. The North does not. And this is why when people say, let's not get involved in politics, because look, we're just here to preach the gospel. Do you realize that politics affects our ability to preach the gospel? That's what Richard Land has been trying to defend for the past 25 years. That's what Oz Guinness is trying to defend. Religious freedom. Do you realize that the laws that are made in Washington, the laws that are made in this state, in Raleigh, and the local community here affect our ability to do just about anything? In fact, the laws that are written in those jurisdictions affect this building, affects what we're doing right now. Laws affect everything, if you think about it. They affect your freedom, your church, your children, your family, your health, your money, your business, your property, your school, your home, your security, your safety, the poor, the unborn, the gospel, virtually everyone and everything. You say, Frank, how does it affect the gospel? Please. Think about this. If you don't think laws affect the gospel, then go to some of the countries I've been to. I've been to Iran, Saudi Arabia, China. We can't do what we're doing in this room right now in those countries. Why not? Because politically they've ruled it out. The laws that are made affect our religious freedom, affect our ability to even preach the gospel or practice our religion faithfully. So laws affect everything we do. And so we have to be engaged politically, if for no other reason, to protect our own rights to live out our faith. And, oh, by the way, before I say that, if there's one current topic politically, morally in our country today that can stop or slow down the gospel, it's same-sex marriage. Because you'll see, this is, in a minute, this has nothing to do with live and let live. This is, you don't see it our way, and we will hurt you. Now, who is this person right here? Anyone tell me who this is? Yes, that is Britney Spears. Now, Britney Spears got into a lot of trouble for this picture. Why? She has got a baby unrestrained in the front seat of her car as she is driving. She is a moral monster. Now, I don't know about you, but when I grew up on the Jersey Shore, my dad used to put me on his lap and I'd steer through town. In fact, Bruce Springsteen has a song about this, that I'd steer through town. My dad would put me on his lap. Nobody thought my dad was a moral monster. Well, what changed? The law changed. We saw too many kids get hurt, so we put in a law that said, look, if you don't put your kid in a safety restraint seat, then you're going to be fine. There's going to be a problem. And now we think that anybody who does this is somehow immoral. You see, the law is a great teacher. Many people think whatever is legal is moral and whatever is illegal is immoral. In fact, you remember this growing up. Many of you do. You remember when you went on those vacations in your wood-sided station wagon? And all your brothers and sisters would be crawling all over the wood-sided station wagon as you were going 70 miles an hour down the highway. And every once in a while, Dad would turn around and say, if you kids don't knock it off, I'm going to smack a few heads together, right? Now, if you don't strap the kid in like he's about to take off in the space shuttle, you're going to jail. The reason is the law. The same thing is true, by the way, with abortion. 40 or so years ago, we had a consensus in this country about abortion. It was morally wrong. All 50 states had restrictions on it. Now we're about evenly split. Why? What changed? The law changed. Many people think whatever is legal is moral, and whatever is illegal is immoral. This is why when... I'll go back to that in a minute. This is why when you change the law, you change the cultural outlook in the minds of people. You change what they think about a particular issue. So making same-sex marriage, the equivalent of opposite-sex marriage, natural marriage, is going to make people think that there's no moral difference between homosexual and heterosexual behavior. Now you say, well, what about the separation of church and state? It's a total red herring. What's a red herring? To get a fox off the trail, you drag a fish, a red herring, across the trail, and the fox would chase the fish rather than, or not the fox, the horse would, the dogs would chase the fish instead of going after the fox. Did I say that right? Whatever. You got the idea. You're trying to catch the fox, and you get the dogs off by dragging a fish across the trail, right? It's a red herring. In other words, it diverts you from the true issue. Even though the Constitution doesn't say anything about separation of church and state, it's not the issue. In fact, what does the First Amendment say? Does anyone know what it says? Very close, sir. Yes, it says, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. The problem in our country is more people knew who Britney Spears was than the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. Notice, by the way, that the First Amendment does not say Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of morality. Why not? Because it's impossible not to establish immorality. All laws legislate morality. In fact, this law right here says Congress shall not make a national church. Well, that is a morality that they're establishing. So the point here is, the point we need to make is this. Religion has to do with our duty to God. Morality has to do with our duty to one another. When we tell people that marriage should be between a man and a woman, we're not legislating religion. We're not telling people, you need to go to this church and engage in these kind of religious rites and rituals. We're not saying that. But we are telling people how they ought to treat one another. And that's what all laws do. All laws legislate morality. The only question is whose morality? And what I'm saying is, let's not legislate my morality. Let's not legislate your morality. Let's legislate the morality. The one that Thomas Jefferson said was self-evident, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Notice he puts life first. Why? Because the right to life is the right to all other rights. If you don't have life, you don't have anything. Now, we all intuitively know this. We all intuitively know that children have a moral right to life. We all intuitively know that men were made for women and women were made for men, but some people suppress that because they want to go their own way. In fact, when people say, don't legislate your morality on me, I say, look, these aren't my morals. I didn't make them up. I didn't make up the fact that murder is wrong, that theft is wrong, that rape is wrong, that men were made for women, and that sex outside of the bonds of marriage is ultimately destructive. I did not make that up. If you've got a problem with that, you got a problem with the Creator. I didn't. This isn't my morality. This is the morality. And you're trying to impose your morality on me. In fact, when they say, don't impose your morality on me, say, then why are you trying to impose your morality on me? You're doing it right now. You're saying you ought not impose ought nots. Why? You're imposing an ought not on me. But nobody ever accused a political liberal of being consistent. So we understand that. What if they say you can't legislate the Bible? What if they say it? Well, it's in the Bible. Well, guess what? If you can't legislate laws that are consistent with the principles in the Bible, then you couldn't have any laws. Are we going to say that we can't have laws against murder because the Bible says don't murder? That's silly. The point here is that if we couldn't have laws consistent with the moral principles in the Bible, then we couldn't have any laws, including those against murder, rape, and theft. We're not legislating the Bible when we say don't murder. We're legislating principles consistent with the Bible. The natural law, which Paul says comes from God, Romans chapter 2, It's consistent with what the Bible says, but you don't even need the Bible to know you ought not murder. It's written on your heart. It comes from the very nature of God. So it's morality, not religion. Again, if they give you the separation of church and state objection, say, this has nothing to do with separation of church and state. I'm not telling you that you have to go to a particular church, but I am telling you how you ought to treat one another, and you're trying to do the same thing. Let's just see what's the proper, what the law properly should be. Now, who could same-sex marriage hurt? Who could same-sex marriage hurt? Next point. Question, true or false? Virtually every social problem we have can be traced back to a problem with a family. True or false? True. If you think about this, this is what I was saying earlier. The foundation of any civilization is the biological two-parent family. True or false? Every child deserves a mother and a father. Is that true or false? That's true. Doesn't mean every child gets one, unfortunately, but every child deserves one. And as I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, same-sex couples always deny their children either a mother or a father. That's just the nature of the relationship. Now, this man is a political liberal. His name is David Blankenhorn. In 2007, he wrote a book called The Future of Marriage. He agrees with so-called gay rights, but he doesn't agree with same-sex marriage. Why not? Here's what he said. Across history and cultures, marriage's single most fundamental idea is that every child needs a mother and a father. Changing marriage to accommodate same-sex couples will nullify this principle in culture and in law. He went on to say, one can believe in same-sex marriage, one can believe that every child deserves a mother and a father, one cannot believe both. Now, Blankenhorn was the witness for the pro-Prop 8 side in California, and the folks on the other side who say they're fighting for tolerance bludgeoned him so dramatically that he has gotten out of the debate completely. He said, I still believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, but I'm not going to fight for it anymore. Because quite often, you know, the people who say they're fighting for tolerance are the most intolerant people out there. This goes back to what we said earlier. The law is a great teacher. And this is what Blankenhorn is saying. Once you equate same-sex and opposite-sex relationships, you're saying there's no difference between them legally, and then people think there's no difference between them morally. And, of course, legally, people have to get in line then. The law begins to teach people that homosexual and heterosexual relationships are exactly the same. And we all know they're not. There'd be no reason for same-sex marriage if they were the same. Everybody would just marry somebody of the opposite sex. Stanley Kurtz, who's investigated same-sex marriage in Scandinavia, puts it this way. Scandinavian gay marriage has driven home the message that marriage itself is outdated and that virtually any family form, including out-of-wedlock parenthood, is acceptable. You say, how does this follow? Norway, for example, has areas of Norway where the illegitimacy rate is 80%. Across the country, it's greater than 50%, I believe. Now, there's a number of reasons for this, but why is this? Because as soon as marriage is not seen as a relationship connected to children, then marriage is simply about coupling, and what people do is they figure if they don't like the individual they're with anymore, they deserve somebody else. And when people don't see marriage connected with children, they see no reason to get married to have children. But of course, they still have children. They just have them out of wedlock. And those people break up at rates much higher than people married. So what you have is explosive illegitimacy. This just adds fuel to the fire of no-fault divorce. You're adding more fuel to the fire, which means you're going to add all the social problems that come with it. The bottom line is same-sex marriage hurts children. It makes marriage a genderless institution, just about coupling and the romantic desires of adults. It divorces children from marriage and divorces some children from their mom or their dad. In Massachusetts, where they've had marriage the longest, same-sex marriage the longest, when you go for a marriage license, there's not same-sex marriage and natural marriage. There's not two kinds of marriage. There's one kind of marriage. What's the marriage? It's genderless now. It's partner A and partner B. Well, on what logical ground should it just be two? Why not three? Why not four? Oh, we're not going to polygamy. Well, on the same arguments you're using for same-sex marriage can be used for polygamy. It can be used for incest. It can be used for just about anything. Well, don't say we're the same as the polygamists or the incestuous. I'm not saying anybody's the same. I'm saying the logic used for the position is the same. So you have to come up with a different argument if you want to come up with a valid argument for same-sex marriage. Marriage becomes genderless, which means if gender has nothing to do with marriage, then children have nothing to do with marriage. If children have nothing to do with marriage, if there's not one institution devoted to children, if it's not marriage, what is it? What is it? The state? Oh, that's where we're going with this. The state is devoted to children. I remember a debate Phil Gramm, the former Texas senator, had with someone on the political left, and she tried to say to him, the state loves your children more than you do. And Phil Gramm said, oh yeah, what are their names? Now, the other side has all the catchy slogans. You know, we're for equal rights, and I want to marry the one I love, and don't put discrimination in the Constitution, and all this, and all those slogans are vacuous. They're not really true. So we need a slogan on our side, and I think the proper slogan on our side would be that marriage is not bigotry, it's biology. That support of natural marriage is not bigotry, it's biology. It's just the way things are. And if you've got a problem with that, you don't have a problem with me. You've got a problem with the Creator who set it up this way. That's just the way reality works. Men and women come together, have babies, and when they have babies, there's mothering and fathering. And mothering and fathering does better than any other kind of parenting relationship. Not to say there can't be good single moms, and I'm not saying that. I'm saying statistically, marriage works better, or I should say children turn out better when they're brought up by a biological mom and dad. Statistically, of course, there are exceptions. Now, here's the real impact. Let's go to Massachusetts, which has had this the longest. In Massachusetts, parents now have no right to know or to opt out when homosexuality is being taught in schools, kindergarten through 12th grade. A lot of people don't know this. This man, David Parker, went to his school administrator and said, I want to know when my kindergartner is being taught homosexuality in class. And they said, you have no right to know that because same-sex marriage is the law of the land in Massachusetts. And he got so irate with them, they arrested him. You see, he's got handcuffs on down here. He spent a night in jail. One Massachusetts school administrator put it this way: the goal is to reach kids before they absorb their parents' values. By middle school, it's too late. And you thought this was live and let live, right? It's not live and let live. Taxpayer money now goes to advocacy groups to promote homosexuality in schools. A couple years ago, the only group to get an increase in the Massachusetts budget were the gay and lesbian groups who were trying to indoctrinate kids into homosexual behavior or to accept homosexual behavior. Businesses must now give benefits to same-sex couples. If you're in Massachusetts and you're a businessman and you are a businesswoman and you give benefits to opposite-sex couples, by law you have to give them to same-sex couples. Oh, you're a Christian businessman or woman? That's just too bad. You thought this was live and let live, didn't you? It's not live and let live. Businesses must now perform same-sex weddings. I'll give you a couple of examples of this in just a minute. Outside of even Massachusetts, adoption agencies must now provide children to homosexuals. There were 90 adoption agencies in 2004 when same-sex marriage was approved in Massachusetts. And Catholic Charities said, look, we have moral religious obligations to this. We cannot in good conscience give children to homosexual couples, but the other 89, they can do it. Can we have a waiver? What do you think the state of Massachusetts said? No. That's right. They said, no, we're so sorry. Same-sex marriage is the law of the land here. You must give children to homosexuals. What do you think Catholic Charities did? They closed. They left Massachusetts. They also left the District of Columbia. You thought this was all about live and let live, didn't you? It's not. See it our way or we will hurt you. Also, religious liberties are being usurped. Check this out. Christian consultant fired by Bank of America over gay marriage book. Just months after being fired from Cisco Systems in California over an anti-gay marriage book, Christian consultant... That guy's a bigot. Yeah, I wrote this little book called Correct, Not Politically Correct, How Same-Sex Marriage Hurts Everyone. I'd been working with Cisco and Bank of America for many years, doing leadership training for them. I had just completed my 7th session out of 10 with them out there in San Jose when somebody in the class the previous day Googled my name and figured out I'd written this book. So he was a homosexual man. He called the HR director and he said, I just learned that Frank has written this book a couple years ago called Correct Not Politically Correct, How Same-Sex Marriage Hurts Everyone. And since he doesn't live up to Cisco values, he ought not be working here. The HR director fired me that day. And in fact, the guy who hired me was told by the HR director to fire me. So he came in to me, happens to be a friend of mine, a fellow Christian. He said, Frank, I got to fire you. And he told me why. He said, what are you going to do? I said, nothing right now. I've learned that you don't make big emotional or big decisions when you're emotional. You just wait. I also wanted to get paid, by the way. And I said to him, I said, Steve, I'm going to bill you for the whole 10 sessions. He said, do it. We'll pay it. I said, okay. So after I got paid, I'm not stupid, okay? I wrote John Chambers, the head of Cisco, who's been the CEO out there for many years. And Cisco is a company that does a lot of networking equipment for, they're very big, they're a $50 billion company. So I wrote John Chambers and I said, Dear Mr. Chambers, I'm a veteran of the United States Navy. I believe in the First Amendment. I believe in the United States Constitution. I appreciate your support this past election for Senator John McCain, who also served in the United States Navy. In fact, Chambers was on the elect McCain Commission in California. So Chambers is a Republican. And I said, are you aware that Senator John McCain holds the same position on same-sex marriage that I do? Are you qualified to be working at Cisco? So the day the letter got there, the next day, I got a phone call from an attorney. And the attorney said, well, I think we made a mistake. What do you want? And I said, well, I don't want anything other than you to call the dogs off other people in Cisco that have a view that natural marriage should be the only marriage promoted by the government. And she set me up to speak to the head of inclusion and diversity at Cisco. So I had a conversation with the head of inclusion and diversity. Her name was Marilyn Nagel, and I had Mike Adams with me. We happened to be out at Summit in Colorado. Mike Adams is a Christian columnist and a very funny and witty one. So I had Mike on the phone with me, and we had this conversation with this lady, Marilyn Nagel. And she tried to say that we don't take a position on same-sex marriage. And I showed her from her website they do, that they were actually bringing in homosexual politicians to teach their employees, how to get same-sex marriage approved in their jurisdictions. I said, are you doing that for the other side? You got the natural marriage politicians coming in? No. And then she couldn't quite get the idea. She just gave me platitude after platitude. She couldn't quite get the idea that in the name of inclusion and diversity, I was being excluded for having a diverse viewpoint. You see, inclusion and diversity is a code word for see it our way or else. It's not really about inclusion and diversity. It's if you don't see it our way, we will hurt you. And in fact, Mike, after that call went so badly, I said, Mike, we got to go public with this. So I gave him the letter I wrote to Chambers. He put it on a town hall column in June of 2011. The title of it is called The Cisco Kid. You can go read it yourself. It's at townhall.com. He wrote a couple other columns after that. And then in July of 2011, I wrote a column on townhall.com called Sex at Work. And my question was, Why is corporate America talking about sex at work? Are we supposed to have sex at work? I guess it depends on your profession. Or if you're running for the mayor of New York. But generally, no, right? So why are we always talking about sex at work? Because this has nothing to do with anything you have to be concerned about at work. It's a political movement. That's what, do you realize that nobody, you never have to have a program at work to teach people that men and women were made for one another? But you have to have a program to teach people that men and men or women and women are okay together. Why do you have to do that? Because you have to indoctrinate people against their basic instincts in order to get them to accept it. This is nothing to do with inclusion and diversity. It has everything to do with exclusion and unity around one thing, political correctness, whatever the agenda is being pressed. Because you don't get excluded if you're being diverse. If you want to be, if the company's trying to be diverse, you don't get excluded for having a diverse opinion, do you? Well, I was excluded. Now, I was not an employee. I was a vendor. So they could fire you for any reason without recourse. If I was an employee, then there could have been a lawsuit. Bank of America did the same thing. So I don't do much of this training anymore because I have a big black mark on my name. So I do much more of this now, telling people about it. But it wasn't just me. This is Elaine Uginen in New Mexico, which doesn't even have same-sex marriage, but they have this crazy sexual orientation law. She was asked by a lesbian couple to do a wedding, photograph a wedding, and she said, due to my Christian convictions, I can't, but you can find another photographer. I'll recommend others. The lesbian sued her, and this went to the New Mexico Supreme Court. It was argued by Jordan Lawrence of the Alliance Defending Freedom, and thank you for ADF for trying to defend our religious freedoms out there. Unfortunately, Jordan lost the case, and she had to pay about $7,000 in fines for not doing this. Now, ADF is appealing that to the United States Supreme Court. Who knows what's going to happen there? But this is not live and let live. This is see it our way or we will hurt you. This lady, owner of Arlene's Flowers, had employed homosexuals in her florist shop many times. And she had homosexual friends, and they came and said, oh, now that same-sex marriage is approved here in Washington, we'd like to do a wedding, and we'd like you to do the flowers. And she said, I'm a Christian. I'm sorry, I can't do it. I'll recommend some other florists to do that. Well, they complained to the Attorney General. The Attorney General of Washington State has now sued her, or how that ever works. They're suing her for violating some sort of law there out in Washington State now, and she's on the hook for, I don't know if jail time or a fine or what. This is the Attorney General of Washington State. Why? Because same-sex marriage is the law of the land in Washington now. This is not live and let live. If you don't see it our way, we will hurt you. And there are many other examples I could go through. I don't have time to go through them. It's been pointed out that there are two trains on the same track heading toward one another. One is called religious freedom and rights of conscience, and the other is called gay rights. And there's no neutral ground. One is going to overcome the other. According to a lady who works in the Obama administration, a lesbian activist by the name of Kai Feldbaum, she put it this way. She said, I'm having a hard time coming up with any case in which religious liberty should win. This is not live and let live. Now, how do you explain all this to somebody in 5 minutes? Well, remember the 4 P's and the 4 Q's. We also put together a short video. We gave it to the National Organization for Marriage. How much time do we have? I'm going to show you this short video. You can also see it on YouTube. Then a few concluding comments and we'll be done. Here we go.
Should marriage be limited to one man and one woman? Why do governments promote marriage between one man and one woman? It's not just because two people love each other. No, it's for the perpetuation and stabilization of our society. This understanding of marriage is rooted in the biological facts of nature. But do we really have any compelling reason to maintain such a narrow definition? Or has the time come for the government to revise and expand our understanding of marriage to include same-sex couples? When it comes to the behavior of its citizens, a government has only 3 options. It can promote, permit, or prohibit their behavior. For example, the state promotes police work, permits most occupations, but prohibits drug dealing. Why? Because dealing drugs harms society, while police work greatly benefits society. In the same way, our government promotes natural marriage, permits most relationships, but prohibits incest and pedophilia. Why? Because incest and pedophilia harm our communities, while natural marriage benefits our communities. And here's how. Natural marriage creates children, it best raises children, it protects women, it civilizes men, it lowers crime, poverty, and welfare, which in turn reduces government spending and deficits. In short, natural marriage perpetuates and stabilizes society. Everyone benefits from that, even those who don't get married. Now, Let's look at same-sex marriage. What benefits does it provide? Same-sex marriage offers no benefit for society as a whole. In fact, it hurts us. Promoting same-sex marriage changes the very purpose of the civil institution of marriage. Natural marriage centers on bringing up the next generation, on raising children to become good citizens. Same-sex marriage merely validates sex partners. We know, statistically, that natural marriage creates the best possible family for children. If we alter the primary purpose of marriage, the losers will be the children. Doesn't every child deserve a mom and dad? But what about natural marriages that don't create children? They are the exception, not the rule. The only relationships that do create children are between a man and a woman. Wherever same-sex marriage is promoted, schools subject your kids to mandatory homosexual curricula. Your business and your taxes fund homosexual relationships. Your freedom of speech is gagged. And your religious freedom is overruled. The government has no compelling interest in legally promoting same-sex marriage. None. But we have every reason to continue to promote natural marriage. But what about equality? The law already treats everyone equally. Every citizen can marry someone of the opposite sex. But is it fair to promote natural marriage but not promote same-sex marriage? Yes, the law treats all people the same, but it doesn't treat all behaviors the same. Same-sex marriage and natural marriage are different behaviors with different outcomes, so the law rightfully treats them differently. Isn't this discrimination against homosexuals? No, this discriminates against behaviors, not people. For example, are you being discriminated against when the government promotes police work, but you never become a police officer? No, not at all. We all benefit when police work is encouraged. In the same way, people who don't marry someone of the opposite sex are not discriminated against when our government promotes natural marriage. In fact, we all benefit when natural marriage is encouraged. But what about tolerance? Yes. Same-sex marriage advocates need to be more tolerant. Homosexual relationships are already tolerated in the US. They can already commit themselves to each other until death do them part, without government endorsement. But only the union of one man and one woman should be promoted, because it alone is the foundation of a civilized society. That's not bigotry, that's biology.
You can see that again if you go to YouTube and type in marriage equals biology, not bigotry. And you'll see it voted down a lot, which means it must be good. All right? Because the other side does not like that at all. That's kind of a summary. Now, if you want to get the complete case at the cross-examined book table, which is in the hallway, not out in the main area, but in the hallway, you, of course, can get this little book, Correct, Not Politically Correct, How Same-Sex Marriage Hurts Everyone. See the book that got me fired, ladies and gentlemen. Also, legislating morality, that gets into more depth on why how all laws legislate morality, particularly on the issues of abortion, homosexuality, and euthanasia. I wrote that with Dr. Geisler, and also another book I wrote with Dr. Geisler is called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, and that there's a new curriculum on the book table as well with that that you can get, and a new workbook and a new DVD set, and there's a bunch of DVDs on the table. I don't want to bring them home, so go get them. And by the way, all the proceeds from the DVDs and the books will go to feed needy children. Mine, okay, just so you know. And there's our website, crossexamine.org. Let me just say a couple other quick words. The born that way argument is really irrelevant to this entire topic. The first question I ask people who say we're born this way is, well, how? I mean, homosexuals don't reproduce, so how is this gay gene passed on, right?